your host for Lacrosse Talk PM, Rick Sola.
All right, here we go, Trigoski. I didn't put it on yet. We'll do it in a minute because I think I've got too many tabs open, and therefore there's all kinds of sounders playing on the board on the computer, so I can't pot up Broncos bravado. But stay tuned. A little radio tease coming up. Broncos bravado after the first news break. In with me today. Welcome to Lacrosse Talk PM. Happy Friday, although the weather sucks.
It does. So. It was great this afternoon, and then it just took a massive turn for the worse.
Went home to walk the dogs, doing the, you know, kind of getting out there. All of a sudden, my dog is lived by Valley High, so the golf course there, we kind of walk around it sometimes, and then she just picks something up in the air, and then Millie's 11 years old, so she's not often sprinting across the golf course. I'm like, where are you going? And then we get out, and she's got to go sniff for, and I just let her sniff as long as she wants, except that then it started raining a little bit. You know, I'm like, Millie, we should probably go. And she's like, really? Because I'm having a good time. And then, of course, then it's downpouring, and we're out like hundreds of yards away from my house. So,
and there comes the wet dog smell.
Yes, that's what the basement will sound like when we get home tonight. 608-785-7914 is the talk and text line if you want to get in here. A lot of stuff to get to. I got all these notes, Trigoski, and where did I put them? I lost all my notes. Now I have 50 tabs open. Chuck Grassley, news on him. The Arizona audit. Dun, dun, dun. We can get news on that. There's this is more maybe just a way to talk about the situation with politics in Wisconsin, the DNR board. We've got to talk about that a little bit. And just appointing Governor Evers, appointing appointees, cabinet members. And then, there was one other one I thought that, and then the redistricting thing. I feel like people fall asleep when we start talking redistricting. It's the most important thing probably in politics right now at this point in time. And, you know, whatever else they're doing, redistricting is probably the most important thing. But
you know those crime shows where they have a bulletin board with like different pictures and different pins in the board and pieces of string?
Well, the best one is probably It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, where Charlie is, I think they're working in a mail room, and he's trying to conspiracy theory where the mail is going.
Yeah.
So he has these strings all over the room.
Yep.
But he's just the mail guy. So, like, what are you doing? Deliver the mail. But, yeah, I got you.
This is what you need to keep track of all the redistricting lawsuits in Wisconsin. You need one of those crazy bulletin boards.
It would be interesting. So it's always nice when somebody decides, and Milwaukee Journal will do this, just deep dives into something. I mean, I've done it this week with Blue Baby. I've done deep dives. I've got more stuff from Hatch Baby coming up next week. Just it's always nice. What if we just did a story, Milwaukee Journal, please, on how many, not redistricting lawsuits, just lawsuits that the government, because my conspiracy theory is that the government, Republicans, Democrats, all these congressional legislature, whatever, all these people that work there, are just buddies with all the lawyers, and it's just like, hey, you propose this thing, and then, you know, Jack, my lawyer Jack, is going to sue you for it, and then I'll propose this thing, and then your lawyer Judy, I don't know why they're Jack and Judy, but Judy, is she's going to sue you guys, and we'll just keep this going. We'll just have, because there's got to be like 10,000 lawsuits a year.
Oh, I mean, you know that when a Democrat was elected governor of Wisconsin in 2018, leading up to redistricting this year, with divided government, Republicans in control of the legislature, and a Democratic governor, you knew that there were dollar signs flashing in the eyes of the elections lawyers, because it was obvious from the moment that we entered into divided government that this redistricting process was going straight to court. And they'll go through the motions, the governor and the legislature. They'll go through the motions. Tony Evers has a map that he's about to unveil through his own commission. And the legislature is going to do the same. They're going to roll out a map. But this thing is going to court. And there was some action on that this week. But again, it's a little weird to talk about lawsuits related to redistricting before we have the darn maps.
Yeah, we don't even have a map.
Yeah, we don't.
There's no map to fight about. We're already suing each other. Yeah. You don't even have a map. You're so entwined into getting your lawyers to sue each other and get the headlines. Hey, look at the Democrats are suing the Republicans. Oh, Republicans suing the Democrats. And it gets all of us fired up. Look how fired up I am on Friday.
Yeah.
All right. Before we kind of teased that, but now we just dove right into it. But one other thing I thought was kind of interesting news is the Senate candidate. She was on my show, I think, last week. Sarah Gadlewski put out a statement just saying that a Supreme Court judge needs to retire. You need to retire. It would be great for the news what is his name? Justice Breyer?
Yeah.
Is it what's his first name?
Stephen Breyer.
So he's like an old dude,
yeah.
But he's also a Democrat, right? So to speak.
Right.
Or what do you call him on the Supreme Court?
You refer to them as a member of the liberal wing.
The liberal wing. Okay. Not a Democrat.
And he's 83.
He's 83. Speaking of 80-year-olds running in politics, Chuck Grassley. Sarah Gadlewski put out a statement and says, dude needs to retire. That it wasn't her official statement. We can get to it in a minute, but that doesn't often happen, does it? When somebody just, I don't know, whether it's a politician or a candidate for Senate. Senate's the people who decide what, you know, to confirm something we don't do in Wisconsin very often, confirm people, confirm a Supreme Court judge. So is that outrageous or pretty... I don't know. What do you think?
It is unusual, but I can understand the intent. And you think about some news that broke today, an interview with Mitch McConnell, who was noncommittal when asked if he would confirm a Biden nominee for the Supreme Court if the Republicans were to regain the Senate majority in the 2022 midterms. Like, if the Republicans get the majority back, will Mitch McConnell even entertain a Supreme Court nominee selected by Joe Biden? And he was saying, well, we'll cross that bridge when we get there.
You got to do better, Mitch McConnell.
We'll cross that bridge when we get there.
You got to throw my in there. Mitch McConnell deserves this, right? Because my first thought was, like, before the last election when Donald Trump was running and we didn't know who was going to win or control the Senate, was Chuck Schumer getting these questions. Hey, if Donald Trump wins, and would you confirm, you know, a Donald Trump candidate? Because that was he asked that question? I guess I didn't. It wouldn't make that many headlines, but that's an interesting question to ask Chuck Schumer.
It is. And I think that people are asking this question because of all of the eyes on Stephen Breyer. And the Democrats are getting less and less gentle, I'll just say, in how they approach their attitudes towards Stephen Breyer. You know, they might sort of suggest or gently nudge him to retire or do our sort of Midwestern passive aggressive kind of thing with him. But you could just come out and say it, like Sarah Gadlewski did, say that we want him out of there so that the Democrats can confirm his replacement while we still have the majority, while the Democrats still have the majority, at least through the 2022 midterms.
I would say I would be a little nervous to do this. He's a Supreme Court justice. I don't know off the top of my head how long he's been at that, but he's 80 years old. Dude's probably got a pretty giant ego. Like, oh, you tell me to retire? Bleep off. I'm going to stay here until I'm 100 if I have to then.
You listen to these Supreme Court justices on both sides, and their egos are beyond compare, Rick.
Yeah.
Like, the amount, just how it goes to your head, it seems, to be a member of the Supreme Court, it really leads me to believe that we need term limits on these people. And that's not an ideological statement, I don't think. I don't really care about the conservative versus the liberal wing personally, but I just have a problem with people who are there forever and feel like they get to hold the rest of the nation in suspense, you know, sitting on the edge of our seats. Will this person retire?
Well, there's so many. When we talk about term limits for Congress, for Senate, for the House of Representatives, that's one thing. At least we can vote those people out,
exactly.
Even though it doesn't happen often. Supreme Court, man, first of all, they're nominated by a completely one side or the other. Like they're getting confirmed and it's totally political. And the other point is that these people don't run out of, they don't have to leave until, you know, Ruth Bader Ginsburg is how old when she passes away, and Breyer's in his 80s. And we need to put them through an agility test, maybe some cognitive tests, a shuttle run, something. Once they get this old, I feel like their viewpoints on society in general aren't going to, like, old dog, new tricks type stuff, right?
It's just wild, Rick. I mean, you've got this 83-year-old Supreme Court justice who everyone is watching. You've got a 78-year-old president. And then, as you mentioned, Rick, 88-year-old Chuck Grassley says he's running for re-election.
Yeah. And then none of them know how to use Twitter.
No.
So, I mean, once you learn, actually, Chuck Grassley's getting pretty good at it. We'll be back after this. All right. Welcome back to a Friday here. No, I just forgot. Broncos Bravado, the Chergosky theme song, the new Anthony Chergosky theme song. He's a political science professor at UW La Crosse. Comes on with me on Fridays. And we didn't even get to this. I wanted to do all the things that we were going to talk about and then actually get to the big story of the day. There it is again. I've got too many tabs over in Chergosky, if you heard that. I got news going in the background. But not news out of Arizona, news out of Florida. Florida man tries to trade back a vehicle he stole from the same dealership that he stole it. So a dude in Florida, and this is where the media, the news, even the TV station down in Jacksonville fails us, is a Florida man he stole a vehicle, then he tried to trade it back into this Chrysler Dodge Jeep dealership, and they figured it out because it had the same VIN number, if not, it's the same car. I don't know. There's not a whole lot of investigative reporting here.
Really hard to crack that case, right, Rick? Right. Where you steal the car and then a couple days later try to trade it back into the same place where you stole it from. Hope they had a real crack detective on that one.
The only problem I have with the news story, and I went and hunted it down on firstcoastnews.com, I guess it's a TV station, but that's their website. And I just searched. First of all, it's not on their homepage, even though every AP picked it up, so every news organization in the world can have it. And then you just search stolen Jeep, because it was from a Jeep dealership, and it's the fifth search item down. So there's that many more stories in Florida, because Florida, of course. 2-year-old missing in D.C. is stolen carjackings. Police dealership looking for a man who stole key from Jeep. Not related. And then there's a couple other ones. But then you get to the store. You finally find it in the search, which it's not on the homepage. And they don't even tell you what kind of car it was. That's all I want to know. What kind of car? Because if it was some lime green, Dodge Duster that he stole, I don't know why he would do that or that why they would have one in their dealership. But it would be pretty funny if that was the car that he tried to return, as opposed to some white Chevy Malibu that everyone drives,
We just need as many Florida man stories. They're like a palate cleanser, Rick. When the news is sad or when the news is depressing, we need a good Florida man story to just cleanse the palate.
Yeah, definitely. And that's what we did there. All right. Speaking of that, we're going to go to the phones. Caller, who's this?
Hi, this is Dan in La Crosse.
Hey, Dan, go ahead. You're on the air with Dr. Chugowski.
Oh, I was hoping you had time for a little Supreme Court talk.
Yeah, that's what we got. We got it. He can break it down with us. You can break it down with us.
All right. I got a theory here that might, I know some people aren't going to agree with it first blush, but my idea is that we do expand the court, and for these reasons. If you have more justices on the court, when one is ready to retire or one dies, it's not such a critical instance. And the other thing is, the more justices you do have on the court, the more balanced outcomes you're going to have. I know not all people are necessarily interested in all that, but for the good of our country, that would be ideal. So we'd get more balanced outcomes because you got more people making those decisions. What do you think?
Yeah, thanks for the call. What do you think, Chergosky?
I think there's something to be said for that. I mean, just in terms of lowering the temperature surrounding the Supreme Court nomination, so they're just not such knockdown, drag-out political battles as they have become. There was actually some really good data on this that came from the Marquette University Law School this week to give us some indication on where the public's at on the Supreme Court. The headline was that the court's approval rating is down. The Supreme Court's approval rating is at 49% right now, compared to 60% in July and 66% a year ago. So the public seems to be souring on the Supreme Court. I haven't found a lot of support in terms of expanding the Supreme Court, but the reform that we talked about in the last segment of having term limits, of limiting the amount of years a Supreme Court justice can be on the court, that is really strong support when you look at this Marquette Law University poll. 72% of the people surveyed supported having fixed terms for the justices instead of the lifetime appointments that they now have. So I think that that's probably the reform that I would lean towards, but certainly there's been a lot of talk about adding more justices to the Supreme Court.
When we talk about redistricting in Wisconsin, and as Iowa's going, everyone's going through this, right? The whole nation is going through this, but there's gerrymandering in a lot of states. Iowa has its own kind of nonpartisan, whatever is it, maybe, is it nonpartisan or like totally bipartisan?
Yeah, it you know, it's meant to kind of create competitive districts.
Right. So we're trying to do that in Wisconsin. We have what's called the People's Map.
Yeah.
Something coalition or something like that, where it's we're just going to take politics out of drawing the political maps, which is kind of oxymoronic, but makes total sense. Why we expand the Supreme Court, term limits? What about a way to nominate justices where it's not partisan, where the president doesn't do the nominating and the Senate, which is going to be controlled by one side or the other? Or, and you'll have to get through the weeds here. There's a filibuster. And to get beyond a filibuster, you need 60 votes in the Senate, something like that, to bring something to the table. Like 60 people have to agree. How does that work?
Or you can just decide to change that rule.
No, but if there is a I'm just saying, like, if we want to confirm a Supreme Court justice, we should have maybe 75% of the Senate has to agree on it.
I see what you're saying. Yeah,
where we really got to nominate someone down the middle. Because you got to think like, oh, okay, so 75% of us have to agree that this guy is going to be for Republicans, for otherwise, just get rid of the Senate nominating Supreme Court justices,
yeah,
which probably means you have to burn the Constitution.
Yeah, you've had all of these Supreme Court justices lately giving these speeches and writing these books about how the Supreme Court is above politics. The Supreme Court is above partisanship, which, of course, is just nonsense. And that's for both sides, the liberal wing and the conservative wing. It's just nonsense for both of them. So I think what we do need, Rick, is some reforms that could potentially get more moderates on the Supreme Court, some ways to, like I said, bring the temperature down when it comes to these knockdown, dragout fights in the Senate. Rick, the reforms in the Senate went in the opposite way that you're talking about, because most recently it was lowered to a 50-vote simple majority to get a Supreme Court justice approved, not like 60 or 70 or 80 votes.
Yeah.
You had basically a rule change to let a Supreme Court justice get approved on a straight-up party-line vote.
Yeah, we talk about, hey, we can't end the filibuster. It's too political, and Democrats are trying to take over the country. Republicans did that last time. They ended the. It's because it's weird. You can end the filibuster, which people, you know, listening probably, what the F are you talking about? Because ending the you can end the idea that you have to have a 60-vote majority and make it a 51% majority. And we just did that. We rolled through a whole bunch of judges during Trump's, final 2 years or maybe all 4 years.
Absolutely. The Republicans made enormous advantage of those changes to the Senate rules that made it easier to confirm judges. The Republicans in the Senate went on an absolute tear in terms of confirming President Trump's nominees. That was a signature achievement of the Trump administration. And now the Democrats are trying to make use of the same rules. But yeah, this thing about the 60-vote Senate, well, it's a 60-vote Senate as long as you want it to be a 60-vote Senate. There's nothing in the Constitution about 60 votes. There's nothing written in stone about 60 votes. The Senate can change the rules whenever it wants. And speaking of Sarah Godlewski, you know, you're hearing this from a lot of Democrats running for Senate, that they want to change the rules to just make everything 50 votes.
Right. And what's funny, I can't wait for, and maybe I just haven't dug deep enough into the headlines, but when Republicans call out Democrats for the audacity that they ask a Supreme Court justice to retire so that they can nominate someone before Biden's term when they control the entire government is up, because the Republicans with the Supreme Court have just threw out the unwritten rules, right? They've done whatever they want in every which way. They've not nominated someone, not even brought him to Garland during Obama. Is it that man? It seems like it wasn't that long ago. And then the Kavanaugh stuff, and then the last woman that they nominated right after. Oh, we gotta push her through quick because anyway, it's all I don't know. It's just all kind of annoying. Anyway, I gotta do the news one more time. We'll be back. All right, welcome back to Lacrosse Talk PM on a Friday. 608-785-7914 is the talk and text line. If you want to get in here, the new Chagoski theme song got it in the system now. So
it's a big milestone to not only have a theme song, but have it in the system.
Yeah, it is in the system. I don't know who sings it. Well, nobody sings it. I don't know who what orchestrates it. I don't, is that the word? All right, we'll fade it out here. I think I'm trying to get... Sometimes the phone just hangs. I think Tremple Tom was calling in, but now it doesn't look like he's there. So, Tremple Tom, try to call back. All right. Two things I want to get to. The Arizona election audit and the – but I want to continue this. First of all, this talk with politics and the – what is it called? The divide in Wisconsin, the fight.
Just the partisanship.
Partisanship in Wisconsin. That's the word I was looking for. But Greg texted in and he goes, Rick, I don't know why you get so excited about Wisconsin politics. You don't have a horse in the race. You live in Minnesota. Right. So it would be like, first of all, it would be like living in Minnesota now as an NFL fan and the Vikings just, they're kind of meh. Actually, they've been pretty exciting, but like devastating. But the Packers are always super exciting. So you just kind of gravitate to the Packers. Like, there's way more exciting to watch the Packers. I'm going to be a Packers fan. And it's backwards because I'm not exactly a fan of Wisconsin politics, but it sure is better for the show. I also am from Wisconsin. My parents live in Wisconsin and I work in Wisconsin. So I feel like stuff that happens in Wisconsin politically is going to affect me at least a little bit because my taxes comes right on my check. I'm paying income tax.
Oh, I get that. But Rick, I think mainly Minnesota politics is relatively normal compared to Wisconsin. Like Wisconsin, there's just like, we have material week after week after week here from Wisconsin politics. And I just feel like Minnesota politics is more like normal.
And is it that way? Because first of all, there's probably like this underlying ticking time bomb in Minnesota because all the same problems that are happening in Wisconsin can happen in Minnesota.
Sure.
They don't have a nonpartisan way to draw maps, so we'll see. But they do have a split House and Senate, or is it a House in Minnesota? Because in Wisconsin, it's an assembly. They have a split House and Senate, and then a Democratic governor. So the governor doesn't matter much at that point, because in Wisconsin, if we didn't have a Democratic governor, we would just do the maps. There wouldn't be all this partisan divide, because there'd only be one side of the aisle.
Oh, the maps would be done like now. I mean, as it stands,
there would still be lawsuits.
I mean, the date to watch is that the Wisconsin Elections Commission wants the maps done by March 1st. And that is a bit of a pinch because of all of the litigation, the lawsuits going through different levels of courts and all the lawyers involved. And you have the legislature versus the governor. Heck, if it was just like unified government like it was 10 years ago, this thing would be done in a snap.
We would still have lawsuits, though.
Oh, yeah, there'd still be lawsuits.
And I don't know where they would go. It is interesting, too, when we just decide to skip steps in the like tier of court systems.
That's right.
Like, hey, we're just going to send this. Can you guys, Supreme Court, you're conservatives. Can you just take this because we don't want it to go through the lower courts? That'll waste too many people's time because we're just gonna sue over and over again until. But at some point, the Supreme Court could say no. The lower court did, but not if they don't go through the lower courts.
No, that's right. I mean, the interesting subplot here is that which court? I guess it's the question of which court is going to make the decision about the maps. And will it be the Wisconsin State Supreme Court? That's where the Wisconsin Republicans want it to be decided because they have the 4-3 conservative majority. You do have Brian Hagedorn, the judge on the court, who is a bit of, you know, he can be unpredictable at times, but you have a 4-3 majority. They seem open to.
He's also the only guy on the court.
He's only the only guy on the court. And it seems like the Wisconsin State Supreme Court would be sympathetic to the Republicans. Meanwhile, you have the Democrats wanting to push this into federal court and this three-judge panel where they have maybe a more friendly, a more receptive audience.
Are you saying we can't point to the federal court and go there Democrats or what? Or that we can?
Well, there you have a 2-to-1.
That was a maniacal laugh, too. That wasn't a Tchaikovsky giggle. That was...
Well, let me tell you about these courts, Rick.
These federal,
yes,
the evil federal courts. But anyway.
It's a giant you-know-what.
Yeah. Speaking of giant you-know-whats, Triple of Tom, you're on the air. Go ahead.
What a strange...
Okay. Thank you, Rick. All right. So, Rick, I would be glad to have a conversation on this now, and it's on the same line that you two are talking about. But I want to start by asking you, Rick, if you know why America is a great country.
Why America is a great country? Sure, I do.
Okay. And if you can answer that fairly quickly, I'd like to hear your answer. Otherwise, I will give you one.
Just get to your point, Tom. Go ahead.
Okay. There is only one reason America is a great country. I mean, there are a lot of other countries around the world and in history that have had a lot of things that we have. But what we have is a great Constitution. And without our Constitution, America would have failed years ago. And that's why when they talk about packing the court, and then all they really want to do is they want to put somebody in there who will not uphold the Constitution, but will make decisions based on their agenda.
All right. Thanks, Tom. We're getting the Constitution talk, Supreme Court talk. Is that true? Is packing the courts unconstitutional?
Well,
seems like we've done that already.
Here's something that you always see in debates over the Supreme Court. When the judges make a ruling that you're happy with, they're just neutral people who are upholding the Constitution. When the judges make a decision that you disagree with, they're activist judges who are ideologues and partisans. And
isn't Brian Hagedorn kind of like the perfect example of that? He's a conservative-leaning justice in the Wisconsin Supreme Court. He's often, I don't know, I don't even know if it's often, he's voted with the other side, so to speak, a couple of times. Therefore, he's like the scapegoat for, you know, what we got.
I mean, he seems to be the one independent-minded member of that body, which tells you something about how political the courts actually are. So, you know, but this is common on both sides, right? Like, when the judges make a decision you agree with, they honorably upheld the Constitution. When they make a decision you disagree with, they're activists, ideologues, and partisans.
Partisan hacks. You got to throw hacks in there. Yep. Speaking of just hack jobs, the partisanship in the state of Wisconsin, which I'm not supposed to care about, but do, because I've lived here most of my life and work here all my life almost. We've politicized the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, like the DNR. We've politicized that somehow. I want to say this even started back with Scott Walker, like removing all climate change information from the DNR website as if, hey, all these studies and that show how the, you know, flooding and temperatures have changed in the state and that might be affected by climate change. We're going to get rid of that because it doesn't exist. It's like this new concept, I think we're trying to eliminate critical race theory in Wisconsin. That is actually a thing that the assembly did yesterday, I think, a committee, right? You know, we go 8 months through a pandemic. The Wisconsin state legislature does absolutely nothing. And now, let's, you know, we got to get this critical race theory out of here. Next coming up, critical climate theory. That's the next thing that Republicans are going to eliminate. Critical climate theory. It's coming.
Critical climate change theory. Yeah, I think that this is a scourge. It needs to be eliminated from the schools.
Yeah, definitely. You can't teach anyone teaching science in a high school right now that says anything about climate change, automatically fined $10,000. The kids can take them to court. Some of the students, we're going to do bounties, climate change bounties, like Texas is doing with abortion.
Rick, you know how in arcade games, you try to get to the next level? You know, you try to level up. And I feel like
it's more of a role-playing game, but I got it.
Like a role-playing game. I feel like making the DNR super partisan and super political is like leveling up in Wisconsin politics. It's like unlocking a new level of partisanship that we didn't know necessarily existed. And Rick, you mentioned what happened under Governor Walker, but what's happening right now is this guy is still saying he's not
Fred Preen.
Fred Preen ain't going nowhere.
Yeah, Fred Preen is the chair of the board, first of all, so he chairs the DNR policy board, so he's the head guy. His job ended in May. Your term is up, dude, leave. We've nominated somebody to take your spot. Democratic Governor Tony Evers has his own person that he would like to run. It's like when a head coach in gets fired and a new head coach comes in, but retains all the staff from the past head coach. Why would I want these people that are from the old head coach if I don't agree with, you know, how we're going to work together? So since May, this guy's job's been up. Since May, we've nominated a replacement. So the interesting thing is something about, like, Governor Tony Evers' cabinet. We haven't even we're still nominating people to his cabinet.
Yeah, and. It was actually newsworthy today that there are going to be confirmation votes on some members of Governor Evers' cabinet. Things that, again, like another...
Governor Evers was nominated, no, was elected in 2017 or 2018?
2018.
So it's 2021.
Yep.
I feel like his term's almost up.
He's been in office for over 2.5 years.
Why isn't the first thing that the legislature does is the first thing you should do is nominate the cabinet appointees?
Well, this is level...
Or not even nominate them, just go through the process of deciding whether to nominate them.
Hey, this is leveling up, Rick. Like, confirming people who have been unconfirmed for over 2.5 years. And this Frederick Preen guy, I love this paragraph from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel story on it. He says Preen has repeatedly said his refusal to step down is not because his successor is unqualified, but because he wants to remain on the board and believes Evers should have reappointed him. So it's open and shut, right? Like, he's not going to leave because Evers should have just picked him.
That would be like me hosting the show, and then my boss is firing me, yeah, telling me to leave, and then I just come in and grab the mic every day, and the the new host is standing over there like, what are you doing? And I'm just a bully, and I don't let them come on.
You get fired from your job, and then you show up and continue working and just say, well, you shouldn't have fired me.
Yeah, can we just stop paying him? Like, just stop paying him. Yeah. That would get rid of him. But he's citing a rule that says the Wisconsin State Legislature hasn't confirmed the nominee to replace him. Therefore, he gets to stay in the job as long as he wants. He's a Republican. The legislature is led by Republicans. The Republicans just kind of like, we don't want to nominate that person yet, or we don't even want to put him through the confirmation process where we could say they are or aren't qualified to do the job. And if we just kick that can down the road, then maybe Governor Evers won't be governor next year. We can keep the DNR board Republican?
It's just new frontiers in partisan politics, Rick. Like, the DNR board, this guy not leaving, not confirming people.
Yeah, we have Governor Evers has 17 members of his cabinet, and 7 of them haven't been nominated. It's been two and a half years.
Well, there's been 2 people who have been waiting since he got in office: Craig Thompson, the Secretary of Transportation, and Don Krim, who leads the Department of Safety and Professional Services. They've been nominated the entire time that Evers has been governor, and they're finally just up for a vote to be confirmed by the Senate.
Okay, I don't know if you know this or not, but are they doing the job? Because when Brad Paff was doing he was the ag secretary. He was actually doing the job. We waited 11 months before he said something that Republicans didn't like and fired him, so to speak. Couldn't fire him because he never officially had the job. But are they getting a paycheck?
Yeah, they're still getting paid. They're still doing the job. But essentially, they can be removed at the whim of the legislature.
Yeah, and people should be upset about this, because if the legislature confirmed these people, they would have to vet them through a process and therefore would go, you know what, you're not worthy of being the ag secretary of the transportation secretary, but we're not going to do this. We're just letting them run the job willy-nilly.
And Rick, that happens all the time, whether it's presidential nominees or the nominees of a governor. You vet them, you put them through the ringer of the confirmation process, and you ultimately find that there are some skeletons in their closet, or there are some real problems with their resume, or their reasons that they should not be confirmed. I mean, that's the whole point of this nominations and confirmation process, to uncover reasons why someone is or is not suitable for the job, and that just hasn't happened, frankly.
I haven't been listening because I'm looked up willy-nilly. All right, we got to take one more break. All right, welcome back to Lacrosse. This doesn't have a Friday feel, this Broncos bravado.
Yeah.
Wrapping up here with Dr. Anthony Dragowski.
It's like too exciting for a Friday afternoon.
Yeah, it's too just like, I don't know. It's just, it's too Western.
Yeah.
It's what it is. It's just too Western. It's, I don't know what kind of day would be a Western day, but we got 2 minutes here. The Arizona election audit, which some Republicans in Wisconsin want to mimic and do in Wisconsin. The results are kind of trickling out in the news, but we haven't gotten that Friday news dump officially yet. But apparently the widely discredited Arizona election audit shows that Biden gained 360 votes.
So maybe because it was widely discredited, it's actually wrong.
Right.
Like, so that there's some like.
It's now it's widely discredited because Biden gained votes.
Yeah.
So then Republicans can back. Yeah, it is discredited. That's not how it works.
You know, Rick, you just got a trivial change in the number of votes for either candidate. You got very little change overall in the vote outcome, even after this long and extensive and controversial process.
Okay, giving you a minute here. Does this... The fact that it shows that Biden won, give it more legitimacy because we keep reporting on it. Hey, look, it's legitimate. It still shows that Biden won. Or should it discredit the fact that we're doing it because all the election officials have said, have given everything that they've given and showed that it was legit? Why we didn't have to do this.
Yeah, I think you need to consider the intent behind this, that there was tremendous pressure from Donald Trump to engage in this cyber forensic audit, whatever you want to call it. And there was a lot of energy among Trump backers in Arizona to go through with this. And ultimately, what they found was really a nothing burger. So, I do think that it matters when you consider the motivation behind doing this whole long, drawn out, and rather chaotic process.
Yeah, just the idea that it's we're going to do the same thing maybe in Wisconsin just to, you know, show the nothing burger. Where did that come from? Willy nilly, nothing burger stuff. We're going to have to get to next week. Also, went a whole day without talking about Hatch Baby. It's unbelievable.